Greetings, everybody. This is John Loeffler. Welcome to Lifetime Income. And today's Lifetime Income is an encore presentation of a program we heard earlier in the year.
The Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, the heart of the American economy is small business. But there's a problem when it comes to retirement. A lot of small businesses owned by single individuals, what does an individual do when the bulk of their net worth is tied up in the business itself? Where does the liquidity come from for retirement? Or, for that matter, estate taxes? Joining us on the program is Dick Gregerson, president at Janus Consulting. And you know, Dick, one of the things that you see in this country that has made it great is these small businesses that start up, whether it's, you know, Steve Jobs and Wozniak working out of a garage, turning into a company like Apple. You know, the great thing about that is eventually it becomes a public company. But a lot of businesses in this country are family-owned, owned by a single individual, or maybe it's a partnership, and it's not a public corporation. So what do you do? For example, let's say, you know, I'm 65. I think I want to retire. I don't have heirs, or if I do have heirs, they don't have an interest in the business. What does an individual do to get that liquidity and be able to retire and basically take out all that blood and sweat that built the business?
Fortunately, you're living in the United States, and we have many, many more options than a lot of other places in the world. There are a variety of different kinds of buyers and deal structures that you can consider in selling the company. There are financial institutions called private equity groups that collect money from wealthy individuals and endowments, and they're out looking for companies to buy and to cultivate and grow. A vast majority of companies get sold to other larger corporations that are looking for increased market share or new products, new ideas, those kinds of things. And there's an area that many people overlook is that if you have a strong person in your company, there's an opportunity perhaps to either sell the company to that individual in a management buyout or perhaps to all of your employees in a tax advantage structure called an ESOP. But all of these alternatives really need to be considered in the context of what your personal goals are, when you want to retire, how you want to retire, do you want to work for a little while longer, and need to consider that in, as part of your overall plan of your estate planning and taxes and those kinds of things, because you're going to suddenly go from hopefully being both cash rich and company rich, but for a lot of these entrepreneurs, you put everything back into the company. You're going to have, you know, some fairly sizable taxes that you're going to need to pay upon sale. And also, you're going to be selling the most important product that you've ever sold, which is your lifetime creation, the company that you built and that you run. And you need to think about how you present that company so that it becomes attractive to other parties.
Now, when you're talking about these businesses, I imagine, Dick, is there a difference between, let's say, a sizable business, a $50 million business, a $100 million business versus, let's say, a $5 or $10 million difference? Are there different strategies given the size of the business?
There are. The smallest businesses, which would be companies where the owner is making less than $1 million of pre-tax earnings, typically gets listed and sold through business brokers. And those are often made up of a lot of Main Street kinds of companies, as well as small specialty manufacturers and service companies. Once you get over $1 million in cash flow earnings, your business starts to become attractive both to larger corporations and to institutional investors. And the larger the company gets, the more valuable it gets relative to its earnings and the sales as well. And the reason for that is that the smaller the business, typically the more dependent it is on the individual owner. And the new buyer has to feel highly confident that if they pay a premium for the company, that your key employees and your customer relationships and your know-how will be transferred. Well, in a larger corporation where you have many levels of management, a lot of that customer relationship and know-how and product development are spread out in various different layers and departments versus, say, a small manufacturing company where you're turning out product and you're both the salesperson, the chief financial officer, and the bottle washer. As a result of that, the companies that are much larger tend to sell for a much higher multiple of revenues and are, in generally speaking, more saleable. Statistically speaking, for companies that are in the business broker size, about 1 in 5 of them find buyers. For businesses that sell for between $5 million and $50 million in an average economy, 1 in 3 will find buyers. They're represented by an investment bank or a broker. That probability increases to somewhere between 50 or 60% or even better than that. For companies that are over $100 million in value, it isn't a question as to whether or not they'll find a buyer. It's really more of a question of whether or not they're going to maximize their value.
And what about the tax advantages? Because we know that if you've started a business and you sell it and you have long-term capital gains, depending on how valuable that business is, the tax rates here could be as much as 23.8% plus any state taxes. What can be done to minimize, and is it easier to minimize the taxes the larger the company? For example, like let's say I own a C corporation. It's fortunate enough that it's worth $50 to $100 million. Well, if I exchange and sell my company in exchange for stock with a public company, there is no tax on the sale of that company until I sell the shares. What about businesses that are smaller? How do you minimize taxes?
Well, two ways. One is if you're a C corp, you'll want to sell the stock of the company rather than the assets to avoid the double taxation. There is no long-term capital gain inside of most corporations, and so you get taxed on the gain on sale, and then the cash that you distribute out to shareholders also gets a dividend tax on top of it. And so that's something that you definitely want to avoid that can help with that. But for other companies, you can defer taxes by receiving some of the payment in terms of a note or a seller earnout so that it gets taxed on an installment sale. And what many owners who are, say, in their 60s and thinking about retiring in a few years, one fairly popular option is to sell out 60 or 80% of the company to a private equity firm, take back a note and continue to have some ownership, and then sell the rest of it when you're ready to retire back to that private equity firm. And so you're selling the company and taking your safe money off the table. You're continuing to receive a salary for the next 4 or 5 years. You have a lot of money behind you to go out and try to grow the company for a final spurt. And then you sell it at a higher valuation 4 or 5 years hence. You don't avoid the taxes, but you do spread that out. And in many cases, what owners have found is that by taking this particular approach, they get as much money on the last 20% as they got on the first 80% that they sold.
Is there anything, Dick, that should be done prior to, let's say, an individual thinking of disposing of his business, whether it's small or large? In other words, setting up the company in a certain type, whether it's a C corp, a sub S corp, are there any things in the planning mode that one should do to set themselves up to dispose of their business in the most favorable manner possible?
Well, the first place to start is with, where is this stock being held? What's the ownership position there? What are you doing for your estate? And have you put it into trusts and generation skipping and those kinds of options that are out there? In terms of the structure of the company, if you have 4 or 5 years before you want to sell the company and it's somehow it wound up being in a C corp, unless there's a special reason to be a C corp, you should probably do an S corp election. And I believe the tax rules are now that if you've been a S corp for 5 years, that you won't have to experience the double taxation that you'd have in the C corp situation. And then on top of that, there are a number of things that you can do to enhance the value of the company. As we said, one of the reasons why larger companies sell for more money than smaller companies is the lack of confidence that under new ownership that the company will do as well. And one of the ways in which to significantly enhance the value of your company and to impress people with the idea that, in fact, you are serious about selling is to upgrade your accounting. Getting an audit speaks volumes about your confidence in the business. I know a lot of owners don't want to spend the money for an audit. They see it as being unnecessary, but for the buyer, it makes it a lot easier for them to obtain financing, and it gives them additional level of confidence that the information that they've received is complete and in a form that they understand under the accounting rules. And I think that finally, the thing that we find in our consulting practice and kind of the reason why we exist is that every owner out there that we've met, there's something that they haven't done so they can sleep at night. You know, after you have trouble making payroll and first few times and you've launched some new products and hired some people and some have worked out and some haven't, there are certain products that maybe you haven't gone after, certain markets you haven't gone after, certain employees you haven't brought on board, pieces of equipment that you haven't invested in, because you have a very nice lifestyle. Maybe your business is making $2-3 million a year for you, and you've adjusted your lifestyle to that. And the idea of taking additional risks is just, you're too old for that. You did that when you were younger and didn't always work out. Taking some of those risks in the last few years running up to the sale of the company does two things for you. One is that it adds to your company in terms of size and hopefully the profitability of the company by taking some of the things that maybe you haven't done but could generate some fairly near-term kinds of results, say starting to sell to Walmart if you hadn't sold to Walmart, those kinds of things. What that does is that if two or three of these things work out and your earnings go from 2 to 3 million to 4 to 5 million, not only are you going to have a larger earning base to sell to the buyer, but you're also going to start showing an upward trend in the business. And the upward trend in the business gives the buyer confidence that going forward, that not only is this a good company, but there's some untapped potential that maybe they can work on in the future.
You know, Dick, what about a situation where, you know, let's say you take a healthy individual, things are going well with the business is generating good cash flow, you got a very comfortable life. But we all know that life is full of surprises. You can see dramatic changes in the business, as we saw in the downturn in 2008 and 2009. Or something happens health-wise that suddenly changes everything. We're talking about disposing of business when somebody's nearing retirement. But don't you think, or wouldn't you advise, that a lot of these steps that we're talking about here should be taken well in advance of thinking about retirement, just in case something comes up, in case there's a downturn coming in the economy? But in other words, you don't want to be caught off guard when something happens in your personal life or in the economy that you weren't prepared for.
You're absolutely right. If you look back over the years, I know that when I was younger, I thought that good times were normal and that difficult times were the anomaly. And I guess in youth, you have plenty of time to wait for, you know, the next upturn for whatever it is you're planning on doing. Now that I look back on it, I realize that, you know, there's some strong markets out there during certain times. So, for instance, in mergers and acquisitions on a worldwide basis, 2015 was a record year for M&A worldwide and a record year in the United States. And 2013 and 2014 were very good years as well. But if you had to retire in 2009 or 10 because of health reasons, or you passed away and left your estate and they had to sell the company, you just probably wouldn't have found a buyer. So I think that there's two aspects to this. One is that if you're thinking about selling in the next several years, that now would be a good time to go to market. Maybe you sell a part of the business, but one way or the other, you create a situation where you sold the company or have made plans to sell the company in a way that allows you to, regardless of what happens, that you have your safe money and your family is taken care of. We're now finding a number of owners that are coming in and saying, what can we do to get my company on the market and take this money out of that business and put it in the bank in dollars and cents? And yet I don't want to retire. I want to continue on working. And it turns out that what a lot of owners don't understand is that both the institutional investors, the private equity companies, as well as many of the corporations, don't want to buy smaller businesses unless the owner is willing to work for several years. And your willingness to continue on work for someone else can add rather significantly. I mean, it can increase the value of your business by 50% from what it would be like if you decided, I'm going to wait till I'm 65, I'm going to sell into whatever the market is, and I'm going to walk away from the business. That statement, I'm going to walk away from the business, can make the difference between a premium price and just kind of an average price.
Dick, let's take another situation, whether it's a small business or large business. But let's say in this case, the individual has children that he would like to pass the business on to. Let's say there's children that are working in the business. So he wants to pass on this legacy. Two things that strike me. Number one, depending on the value of the business, is there's always estate taxes, because if a business has a value, the government wants to look at that value at death. So whether it's a large corporation where the family is run, or there's heirs that are going to be taking over that business, or it's a small business, what about succession plans with, let's say, your own family? What are the things that you see or recommend that should be done there?
Well, you know, some of us are great savers and planners and accumulate enough money to retire without having to depend upon the sale of the business to pay for that. But the vast majority of business owners haven't had that luxury, particularly after all the difficulties that we've been through in 2007, 8, 9, and 10. And so most owners who want to pass things along to their children need to have some money to live off of. And so selling a part or all of the company, particularly selling enough of it to your heirs so that the remaining value of the company doesn't subject you to a large estate tax, is probably a pretty good strategy. And right now is a good time to do that, because there are, on the smaller deals, say buying out a business worth $10 million or less, there are a number of lenders that are willing to back your children in terms of paying for part or all of that company. For larger transactions, those kinds of deals are very much favored by private equity investors, their theory being that by having your children buy the company, from their standpoint as an investor, you may have sold the company, but you're not going to let your kids fail. And so their risk in paying you a premium for the company, it's a lot easier for them to pull the trigger on it, knowing that, you know, you're still going to be there to give Junior some advice when they run into a problem that they haven't encountered and you know how to solve that. But not putting that kind of stuff together does a couple of things. One is that from a psychological standpoint and a management standpoint, you need to give your kids the time and the freedom to be able to establish themselves managing the company and taking on real responsibility and stepping into your shoes, because there's a financial aspect to this, but there's also a managerial and psychological aspect to it as well. And that's something that you'd be best served by giving them that real responsibility and really stepping away from the business as part and parcel of this buyout. And we found that having your children borrow money from the bank and buy out a portion of your ownership, and at the same time handing over the reins for maybe it's a set of product lines, or maybe it's a divisional office, or whatever the scope is of their activity, that coupling those two things together are transformative and really take the first giant step of transferring that ownership, both in financial terms and in managerial terms, to your children.
So as we sort of sum up here, Dick, depending on the size of the business, depending on your age or whether you have heirs that can carry it on, this should be part of your business plan. And don't just think of, well, that's something I'll do when I get to 65 and closer to retirement, because there are a number of things that can change family-wise, health-wise, in the economy. What would you recommend an individual do that has a business like that? And let's say they're, I don't know, maybe 5 years, 10 years out from retirement. What are the steps they should do? Contact somebody like yourself, contact an advisor, and start putting a plan into effect. What would you advise?
The sale of the business and your transition into retirement is one of the biggest projects you're ever going to undertake. And it literally touches every aspect of your life. Most business owners, their business is their life. They have breakfast with their vendors. They take their customers out to dinner. They're available to the business 7 days a week. So you really need to first start with two plans. One plan is, what can I do to enhance the value of my company? And what are those things that I can implement to make it so it's easier to sell? Maybe there's some new products or projects or things like that that you can do that would significantly enhance that value. And the other side of it is your estate planning side. How can I transfer this wealth down to my children at the lowest possible cost? How can I defer taxes on the sale of the company and then eventually on the estate? And then how am I going to make money after I've retired? And that's perhaps one of the biggest questions that we find with our sellers as they get to the end of the process and they say, gosh, I'm going to have all this money. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Where should I invest it? What should I do with it? I know I'm comfortable having it in my company, but many of them haven't thought through, what are they going to do? They go from having $1 million into their IRA to having $20 million after tax after they sold their business. And so thinking about that in advance and starting to make plans along those lines so that you wind up with the kind of investments that you want and you're exposed to the kinds of opportunities that are going to help you in your post-retirement life.
Well, listen, Dick, as we close, if our listeners, maybe there's somebody listening to this program that is in that situation, maybe they're 5-10 years away from retirement, or they want to retire now, but they're trying to find or think about issues of which they can monetize that business, if they wanted to contact you, how could they do so?
Please give us a call at 626-432-7000 or visit our website, janusconsulting.com, and you can learn more about company and our various advisors and get in contact with us directly.
Well, listen, Dick, as always, it's a pleasure having you on the program. I want to thank you for coming on, and please come back and talk to us again.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
Today's Lifetime Income program was an encore presentation of a previous Lifetime Income show heard earlier this year. Next week, we'll be back on our normal broadcast schedule.